She prepped it so we could have fish and fowl for dinner. I searched the shadows for my little blue friend. Though I couldn't read his mind, I figured he was pretty tired after going toe-to-toe with that larger bird. He was probably back at his woodpile, or maybe just lying low while Trell was griping.
So you have a dubious reason to exert yourselves, an incompetent male giving you orders, and a silly plan based on giving up a perfectly good cave so we can live like hobos in the forest. I understand his problem,
Trell pointed to me.
He's an idiot. But why are you two women going along with it?
It was the moment of truth for me and my grandiose plans for building my little empire. Though any reasonable person could argue the danger of building and living in the fort versus staying in the cave, finding an orange bird right at our door was a game changer. I didn't think Sheila and Galmine could possibly agree with Trell that we were wasting our time. But maybe our lack of progress today gave them second thoughts. They shared looks with each other before the rock woman replied to Trell.
I'm sure Sheila feels the same as me. Victor has done nothing but help us since he arrived, and even though I don't understand everything he says, I'm willing to give his plans a chance. Before he showed up, you often talked about how rescue is coming to help us. Trell, you are a wonderful friend, and have been right about so many things, but maybe Victor is our rescue.
Trell stifled a laugh while Galmine kept talking.
Over the past couple of days, we've started building and creating. I'm working on more pots. We're eating better than we ever did before. As Victor explained, having a fort out there will keep us safe and protected. We'll be able to focus on other, more pleasant pursuits.
Galmine lived up to her cheerleader personality as she set down her cord, leaned over, and hugged me from the side. I inhaled the intoxicating perfume that never seemed to abandon her. Now one is perfect, Sheila added, but Victor asks for our help. He admits when he's wrong, and looks to the future as a leader should. He has brought us hope in a difficult time. And the threat from the birds is real. Unless you also mistrust your own eyes, it is folly to ignore all the signs, Trell.
It cannot be folly to live inside a rock fortress,
Trell said in a respectful tone. Though she was willing to bite my head off just for existing, she seemed unwilling to raise her voice to Sheila or Galmine.
Building the fort will not be a waste of time, the beautiful catwoman replied in a calm voice. If the birds never come, we can live in the cave as well as the fort. If they do come, we will have the safety of the fort until the cave is ours again.
Rescue is coming,
Trell replied.
I promise you that. My sisters would never forsake me. The cave is plenty safe for the short time we'll need it. Why am I the only one who sees it? He has you running outside the cave to find extra food and water, so you can expend those calories on his dumb project.
She hissed the word his. You hate the plan because I'm a man. I get it, I said sarcastically.
Yes, Victor. Your honesty is appreciated,
Trell replied instantly.
Males can't be trusted. On my planet, you would never get away with speaking to me as you do. You couldn't speak to any of us women as equals. I guess I'm just too nice.
I sighed at what was becoming a tiring argument with Trell. Her animosity toward me was never-ending, even when I used her proper name and brought her food. I doubted I could convince her to work with us, but I hoped I could get her to stop working against us. That she was failing to win over Sheila or Galmine was enough of a victory for me. I should just tell her to fuck off. I wanted to tell her to fuck off, but I thought about the endgame. It didn't matter that Trell was being difficult. Yeah, it made me mad, and it did hurt my ego, but the goal was building our camp. I really did need the Spider Woman's help. There was a chance I'd never get it, but she definitely wouldn't help me after I cussed her out. My dad often handled the customer service part of my parents' vet business. We had plenty of pets die for reasons that were out of our control, and the customers often blamed us for the death of their loved one. My dad always took their insults and their rage, smiled, and then apologized. 9 times out of 10, the people ended up calling him back to say they were sorry for the outburst. I was betting Trell would come around.
The math is easy,
Sheila replied, and I turned my thoughts away from my parents and back to the conversation.
Victor has worked tirelessly to provide food, water, and wood since he arrived.
You, by contrast, have eaten food, drank water, and benefited from the fire all without...
You can't shame me,
Frel interrupted Sheila with a chuckle.
Even without wanting to, I have contributed my share by providing free advice when I deemed it necessary. Galmine is probably 5 times more efficient at making cordage thanks to me. Over the course of his silly little project that could be days of time saved, Victor can't claim the same efficiencies.
Guys, I said with a sigh, we can't argue with each other. It'll get us nowhere. Trell, your idea did save us a ton of time, and I'm really thankful you got involved even though you didn't want to. It proves you're smarter than me in all sorts of ways. You are adding to our efficiency without even trying. But imagine how great we could be if you did try. Trell smiled wickedly and clapped her hands a couple of times. The bone-clacking sound from her chitinous claws was eerie.
Oh, Victor. Simple, sweet, soft-skulled Victor. You use the derogatory male slang guy on me? And then launch a clumsy attempt to butter me up? Do you really expect your gratuitous flattery to change my mind? Is that how little you think of me?
The dark spider woman seemed really happy with herself. I tried to analyze what part of my statement was empty flattery, but she kept speaking before I could figure it out.
I have 10,000 suitors seeking my hand back on my homeworld. Let me assure you, I've heard every lame suck-up you can imagine. You haven't even scratched the surface of high-quality ass-kissing.
Trow laughed like she saw something funny in her mind's eye. Did it ever work? I asked. I didn't mean it to be snarky, but with 10,000 men chasing her, I was interested to know what the winner said to gain her favor. She seemed to stare at me with that glowing red fire in her black eyes, before softening a tiny bit.
No, it never worked. I am Trell Edil Iria, after all. I do not fall for unintentionally humorous begging by juvenile-minded males, my last 2 mates. I picked with the kind of care that someone of my standing should exhibit.
Humorous begging works on a lot of people, I said, while trying to ignore the image of those 2 mates getting consumed by her brood. I had a friend back on Earth. Man, he could pick up women like no one I ever saw. He wasn't even what I would call a great-looking guy. Not bad, just not a model, if you know what I mean. Victor? I don't really know what you mean, Galmine said with a shrug and caring smile. Oh, well... This guy could walk into a bar, look at all the women, and then pick the one he was going to take home that night before he even said his first word. He can make up any story he needed to get the girls to sleep with him. I guess you'd call it fake flattery, but that isn't how I operate. When I tell a girl, a woman, that she's been great, it doesn't mean I'm kissing ass. Trell didn't bite my head off with a reply. I couldn't predict if she'd use the time to consider what I'd said or if she was preparing a suitable insult.
You told us how your friend picks up women, Victor. Do you also lift them as he does?
Galmine asked with no trace of sarcasm. We don't lift girls. Pickup is a way of saying how men try to get girls to go home with them and then have sex. I replied like it was a textbook answer.
Oh, even better. I'd love to know how you picked up women and bedded them,
Galmine asked while she playfully squeezed my knee. I sat between her and Sheila, but Galmine remained much closer after she hugged me. She loved to talk with her hands, and sometimes, like now, she spoke with a hand glued to my body. I don't think you'd be very interested in my sex life, I finally replied. Talking to 3 attractive women about how I failed at picking up attractive women seemed like a no-win scenario.
You're right, we aren't,
Trell shook her head, but she didn't move back into her alcove. I should get back to work. I stopped carving to consider how much I had left. After a couple of hours of whittling with sharp rocks, I'd only carved the hole about halfway through the wooden handle.
No, please,
Galmine said in her cheery voice.
I want to know all about you. You don't have to be ashamed. On my world, sex can be initiated by either gender. But usually there are so many of us together you never really have to worry about finding body warmth.
I cocked my head with an admittedly confused look on my face. You mean you have sex with multiple people? I asked. I tried not to sound overly interested in the topic, even though I was.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm surprised someone like you doesn't find it easy to engage multiple partners.
Galmine said as if the idea was incredible.
You're so handsome.
I sat there, not sure what to say. On the one hand, I was never great with women, and when I was finally getting a grasp on them, my parents died in the car accident. I'd been forced to drop out of school and get a job. The confidence to talk to pretty girls wasn't really on the table when one was eating ramen every day to barely scrape by. On the other hand, after spending a few days on this planet, I wouldn't be afraid to go back and hit on every sexy woman at Lacey's pool party. The threat of death put everything in perspective.
Thanks, Galmine, I said. I should probably explain that my world is very dull. The silver-haired swimsuit model went on. It can be cold and lonely at times, but we manage to grow more than enough food to keep us healthy and alive. There's little to do in the chill of nighttime except gather in large groups for warmth, talk, and to find comfort in the bodies of others. It would be rare to engage in such flirtations with just one partner.
Ew!
Trell chimed in.
The thought of suffering the presence of multiple men makes my stomach churn. I enjoy sex with the one I deem worthy, but finding a second male for the same breeding period would be tedious beyond words. Can you even fathom the sight of two victors?
Galmine hummed. Her broad smile and hungry eyes suggested she totally disagreed with Trell. I smiled back, but had no interest in arguing the point with the spider woman. The charcoal and embers of the hot fire snapped and crackled as the discussion momentarily died down. The smells of our dinner hung in the air of our smoky chamber, though most of it wafted out the front door. So, Sheila, does your kind have multiple partners like Galmine's world? I asked as I turned her way. She continued to crank out cord at an impressive rate while we all chatted, but she stopped at my question.
Only the males. The strongest men may take as many wives as they can support. Many have three or four, but a few have much more, especially the nobility. My husband is a lord of a very powerful province on my world. He has the wealth and power to support a great harem of women. I became his property a week before I was brought to this planet.
Sheila spoke calmly, but I interpreted sadness in her words. You were a newlywed? I'm sorry, that really blows, I said sympathetically.
Do not feel sorry about my marriage, the feline woman replied. I was his 17th wife, and we only met once to consummate the arrangement. If I had not been taken and brought here, our next night together might still have been many months from now. All husbands of power have their favorite wives.
I don't think I would like your world, Sheila, Galmine admitted. Can women have multiple husbands? That might make it a little better, she said, sounding uncertain.
No. Women are property, and we seldom cooperate among our gender because the competition for marriage is so intense, Sheila explained. And what of the extra males?
Trell asked from back in her chambers.
If there are so many women to each man, what happens to the males who have no women?
Wars claim some, Sheila explained. A few die fighting each other for the right to establish a pride. Sometimes they just disappear. I really do not know what happens to them all, and I never questioned any of this until I arrived here and had to consider my new situation.
Won't your husband come looking for you? I offered the question as a way to cheer her up. I figured being married meant the spouse would move worlds to find her. That's what I would do if Sheila was my wife.
Women on my planet do the bulk of the hunting when we are not engaged in mating rituals or rearing cubs, Sheila said dryly. I was abducted while I was tracking game in a remote forest of our lands. It could be months before my husband knows I'm not in his home, and further months before they figure out where I was last seen. I will be declared missing and assumed dead when they find no trace of me. His 18th wife will then become the 17th, and life will go on.
Damn, I uttered under my breath. Also, my people have no means to travel to this planet, even if Lord Ernaz was aware I'd been brought here, Sheila said with finality.
Is that the name of your husband? I asked. Sheila acknowledged my question with a curt nod.
That's horrible, Sheila, Galmine said with a frown. I think you should divorce Lord Snazzy and find a new better man. If you come to my world, I can introduce you to many who will treat you better than that. But I warn you, we do not have such concepts of ownership or exclusivity, and one sex does not rule over the other.
Thank you for your generous spirit, but marriage is something my people take very seriously,
Sheila replied while looking to the gray-skinned woman.
Divorce is rare, even when the husband is negligent. Most women with bad husbands learn to endure the suffering rather than seeking a way out.
But it can be done?
Galmine replied. Her world sounded like a party, while Sheila's sounded a little like slavery.
Women are traded all the time as property, but I could leave on my own if I found a stronger male,
Sheila replied before continuing to work with her cord. Sheila's body language suggested she didn't want to talk about it any further, so I tried to think of a question that would change the topic again. So are you married, Trell? I asked. I didn't want Sheila to feel uncomfortable, and I also wanted to keep the discussion far away from my uninspired background with the fair sex.
Such a primitive concept. Did you not hear I have thousands of suitors? Why would I ever pick just one?
Trell gave her answer as if it were so obvious. Because you love him? I said with amazement that we were actually talking back and forth.
Ha! Idiot!
Trell laughed from her belly.
You would say that. I bet you think of love as a means of entrapping a woman, which is a common fantasy among males on my world. However, there is no higher love than dying for me during the mating process. Once the male has served his critical biological function, he is to be discarded, and his body preserved until his children mature enough to consume him for nourishment. That is when I love him the most.
The spider woman smiled, and I could see her fangs glimmer in the firelight.
Oh, shit. That was you?
I said, as I remembered when Sheila had first brought me to the cave.
I thought I hallucinated when I first got here because someone said they wanted to, have sex with me and then eat my body.
Trell laughed in a way I'd not heard before. It wasn't her usual malicious cackle, but something which sounded a lot more like a normal human laugh.
Oh, Victor, if you have one positive trait, it is that you make me laugh.
She chuckled a bit more before speaking again.
I made the statement before I knew you. Now that I've had time to judge where you would fall in my suitor list, you can rest assured you are almost in the back. Perhaps in the final dozen out of all 10,000 males. Do you see why your words are so humorous to me?
Wait a sec. So I'm not dead last on your list? I grinned at her.
Ugh, you don't know how to take an insult, do you?
Trell replied, while doing her best to sound disgusted with me. Like you said, I'm just a simple ass-kisser, I added with more good-natured laughing. Trell didn't reply. Instead, she turned away, stomped back into her alcove, and slung her curtain shut to end our discussion. I quietly laughed for a few more moments, until I remembered Sheila probably wasn't in the same good mood as me. I turned to the blonde woman and caught her smiling. I am sorry about your husband. Are you going to be all right? I asked her.
Do not worry about me, Sheila replied. I was sad for a time, yes. My husband seemed like a decent man. Life is often cruel, and there is nothing I can do about it except survive. The challenges of this planet are much more severe than on my homeworld, so in a sense, I am thankful for this burden, as it will force me to become a better warrior to endure.
Wow. And I thought I was the glass-half-full person, I replied. You were yanked from your life and dumped in dinosaur land, and you see it as a learning opportunity? I stand in awe of your positivity. Sheila nodded, and her smile grew a bit larger.
What's dinosaur land? Galmine interjected. Is that what this world is called?
I highly doubt it. I call it dinosaur land because it sounds like Disneyland. That is a place on my world where children go to be entertained with rides, food, and brightly painted replicas of animals like dinosaurs. I went there many times growing up. It's the kind of place a child never forgets. My words reminded me of the many trips I'd taken with my parents, and I felt my mood sour a bit.
Your home must be fabulous, Victor,
Galmine suggested in a cheery voice that perked me right back up. It has its ups and downs. I think I'd rather live on your world, where everyone is, friendlier with each other. Of the three women, Galmine's free love planet was the sweet spot. Sheila's society, with forced marriages and unhappy women, sounded like no fun at all. And who the fuck would volunteer to have sex with and then get killed by a woman like Trell? No night of sex was worth that penalty. Was it?
So you didn't answer me earlier. We've all shared a bit. How do you pick up women on your planet, Victor?
Galmine blinked her big green eyes suggestively and moved her hand further up my leg. I got the sense she was asking me because she wanted me to try to pick her up. It was also becoming difficult to carve the axe handle because she sat right up against me. If she got any closer, she'd be in my lap. You really want to know? I asked, though I sincerely hoped she'd say no.
Yes, I really do,
Galmine said while leaning even closer. I regretted mentioning my lady killer buddy Dale and his exploits at the bars. There was no way I could embellish my skills at finding women to be anywhere near as successful as him. I toyed with the idea of making something up, but telling lies to my new friends would backfire. I had a face that made it easy for anyone back on Earth to know when I was fibbing. Okay, well, there isn't really a lot to talk about. I scraped the axe handle with my small flint knife a few extra times before continuing. I'd never been great with women. I was a bit shy growing up, and when I did go out to party, I normally ended up being the designated driver. Also, I was really broke, and I never felt confident asking a girl out. I realized explaining all this to three alien women would take all night, and it wasn't going to help them think I was any cooler.
I'll listen,
Galmine said patiently. Her hand seemed to be getting closer to my crotch, but I couldn't see her moving it. That's okay, I sighed. Let's just get back to work. My love life has been all sorts of boring. I set the axe handle down to give myself a break. I leaned back on my hands to stretch, which only made it more obvious where Galmine's hand was on my leg. I took a moment to study my pants to ensure my growing boner wasn't too obvious. Then I stayed in that position, waiting to see if she'd drop her question.
I doubt that, Galmine said emphatically. You're just the right amount of nice. Hard and soft, like I said, she added with a giggle. But you care for others as much as yourself. Animals return affection without question, but women require real emotions, not those created by artificial means. You and your golden heart would fit right in with my people, because you broadcast your desires without any hidden agenda. You're being modest. I bet you've had hundreds of lovers.
That's nice of you to say, Galmine, but it really isn't like that.
Then the women on your planet are fools,
the gray-skinned woman said as she shook her head.
You are honorable and gentle, and I'm very happy you are here with us, as is Sheila.
I turned to look at the blonde woman, but she was focusing on her rope. Her eyes didn't meet mine, but she did give her usual nod.
And you are happy to be here with us,
Galmine cheered.
I can tell from your body.
I think you might be mistaken again, I started to say.
Am I?
Galmine said in a teasing way.
Then how do you explain this?
She grabbed my flagpole of a dick, but let me go right away. I jumped at her forwardness, but relaxed when she pulled back. I glanced to Sheila to see if she saw my reaction, but she remained focused on her cord twists.
Can't control that,
I said with mild embarrassment in my voice.
Victor, I live on a world where men and women are honest with each other. When a male looks at a female as you do, there is no question what he's thinking,
Galmine said while her eyes were on my crotch, in case there was any doubt what she was talking about.
But it doesn't mean anything, I said while pondering if my words were helpful. I'm like that a lot.
I felt a little like I was being put under the microscope by the way she talked about my, physical stimulation.
And yet, you did not act on it,
Sheila said as she rejoined the conversation.
A male on my world would enter this cave and demand sexual dominance over the females before agreeing to protect us.
Sexual dominance? I asked, since I was unsure of her exact meaning.
He would demand intercourse to assert himself, and then cover us with his seed to mark us as his.
Sheila replied dryly.
Damn! I hissed. I spoke of this earlier, Victor. I have seen you look at our bodies. There is no shame in your reaction. Galmine touched the problem you have carried around since you've arrived here, yet you've controlled your obvious urges. Women notice these things. You are not admitting your talents, but it is easy for us to see how strong, brave, and caring you are.
Sheila smiled a little, then turned back to the fire. She continued speaking a bit softer, and to no one in particular.
I find that attractive.
Me too. The restraint makes you super sexy.
Galmine purred as she rubbed against my rock-hard dick once more. I felt a little guilty because Sheila definitely saw her do it that time. I wasn't sure how to handle the attention, I just knew I didn't really want her to stop.
I appreciate it.
But I didn't come here to have sex with anyone. We have a shit ton of stuff to take care of. This axe, I picked it off the ground and made as if to continue cutting, is one thing of a million that we have to do before those birds arrive. I can't be thinking about enjoying myself. I admit I shifted through all six gears to speed away from my throbbing lie about not wanting to have sex. Galmine could have had me undressed in about 3 seconds if she wanted. Sheila could rip through my clothes in two. And Trell was a dark horse, except for the part about death. Having sex with her would probably be mind-blowing. All the discussion about sex was cramping my ability to think about our survival. I needed it to stop. At least until our new camp was built.
We'll stop. For now.
Galmine said quietly. She gently slid her hand back down my leg and off my knee with a coy smile. She turned so she faced the fire more directly, then picked up her cord to resume her work. Part of me was very angry for steering the conversation away from sex, but it had to be done.
So, can you tell me how you made the pots, Galmine? I asked.
She'd made the new water jugs earlier this afternoon, and then set them inside our fire ring to bake them. I couldn't think of a question that was any less sexy than clay pots.
Sure,
she said happily.
But don't think this changes anything, Victor. I like you, and I'm not going to hide it.
I understand. I replied with a gulp. My heart also skipped a few beats at even the slightest hint that Galmine and I would be together.
So, the pots are easy to make, she said as she gestured to her workspace. I rolled the wet clay and mixed it with some rock chips I broke off from the stone here in the cave. It helped to keep them firm. Once I shaped them like you asked, I let them dry for a bit before I dropped them into the fire to bake.
She pointed at the two jugs sitting inside the fire ring.
Sheila has been real good about keeping it hot enough,
Galmine added.
They should both be done in the morning.
We all had to sit back a little further due to the extra heat, but it was worth it to speed up the production of the two crucial additions to our inventory. I looked at their narrow tops and continued cutting the axe handle while I thought about how I'd arrived at their shape. A key piece of my time management strategy was eliminating the midday and late-day water runs. Sheila had explained how it was safer to go out in the morning for water, but for that to happen, we needed to get all the water for the day on the first run. My first grand idea was to make an aqueduct. We learned about those in school, and all it would take was some kind of hollow plant like bamboo to build one. Just lay them end to end with one dripping into the next, and you could get water from the stream to our new fort. Sure, it would be a quarter mile long, and probably be leaky as hell, but it would eliminate the dangerous journey completely. I imagined how cool it would be to have something like that. But in the end, I knew it was too ambitious. Even if we found the hollow bamboo we needed, it would take a week to cut them and lay them out across the forest. My next idea was to create a bigger container so we could hold more water for each trip. But when I started to think about how much water I could realistically carry, I knew bigger wasn't necessarily better. I'd lifted enough half-empty fish tanks to remember how heavy water could get. The idea I went with was much more realistic. I remembered seeing something on TV about moonshine jugs, which were basically fancier versions of the typical 1-gallon milk jug. Looking at them inside the fire, I admired the small holes at the tops so the water couldn't slosh out. Galmine also added small handles, which would allow us to hang them on opposite ends of my spear. That way I could carry both jugs over my shoulders like a barbell. If my estimates were correct, I could carry a total of 2 gallons on a single trip, instead of the half-gallon pot we'd been using. So, instead of getting 1.5 gallons over the course of 1 day, we get 2 full gallons on just 1 run. It would for sure be a leap up in our tech tree. Galmine continued to talk about the red clay and some technical details about how she managed to use her skills to harden and dry it. But I was sort of distracted by a piece of partially burned firewood that I'd noticed earlier. With all the stoking Sheila had been doing to the fire, her fanning blew some coals onto a flattened piece of unburned wood. Over the course of the evening, I'd noticed how the hot coals sort of sunk into the wood as they burned.
Shaping the earth and manipulating rocks is part of how we get so much food to grow back on Telluride. As you can see, it also comes in handy for things like this.
Galmine pointed proudly to her clay creations in the fire.
Awesome. I can't wait to use them tomorrow,
I said with sincerity. We dropped into another period of silence as the three of us got back to our respective tasks next to the fire. Even as I carved the axe, I had to continue to plan. All through the day, when I wasn't thinking about water, food, or sex, I thought about our shelter. My whole plan depended on getting the fort built before the birds arrived. But if today was any indication, it felt like the video game clock skipped ahead. I needed to be more like the Koreans, who were well known for being masters of planning and execution in the gaming arena.
I've been thinking about something all day, I began.
We have to figure out how to stand up the logs of our fort so they won't fall over if something pushes against them. In my head, I know how I want it to look, but I need ideas on how the hell we make it work.
I assume you've thought about digging under them.
Sheila asked while twisting one of the cords on her thigh.
I'm sure we could use a large stone or branch to clear dirt and cut through soil.
I can work with the soil, if you'll let me. I helped on the farms back home,
Galmine said as she twisted cord on her thigh. You want to come out of the cave? I asked.
Of course. I came out of the cave today. Or have you already forgotten our meeting?
Galmine taunted playfully. I do remember it. Nothing about you is forgettable, Galmine, I replied. I really wanted a do-over for that encounter. I was about to learn if her lips were hard or soft, but we were interrupted by Jinx in his fight with the orange bird.
Aw, you're so nice, Victor,
Galmine said before I could continue. Quietly, she added,
some women love flattery.
Galmine had a lot of things going for her, but speed wasn't one of them. She had trouble with manual dexterity and typically did everything with great deliberation and care. I couldn't even pull her up the ramp to get her to run when Jinx had his fight. That's what made it so terrifying to imagine her outside for more than a few minutes.
Thanks. But as much as I want to see your smiling face in the sunshine, it is dangerous for you to be out of the cave.
I would be worried sick about you. I didn't want to make her feel bad, but she was the one that seemed to need most of our protection. I tried to get my mind back into the tasks ahead. There had to be a method we were overlooking. Ancient civilizations on Earth made their forts and walls well before the Industrial Age. How the hell did they do it? Can we hammer the logs from above using a big rock? I wondered aloud to end any thought of Galmine going outside.
Maybe if we used our rope and hung a rock from a tree, Sheila offered. I admit I do not know if it would work, but we could try.
I looked at Trell's curtain, wondering if she'd grace us with any ideas. She loved to poke holes in my plans, so maybe she would point out the flaws in this one. She hadn't come out for these ideas, so maybe we were onto something. Can you climb? I replied to Sheila.
My people often make camp in high trees for mutual protection, the feline hunter said. Climbing will not be a problem. Though we will need thicker cord to hold our rock hammers.
I thought about the branches of the redwoods and was fairly confident someone could hang above the fort walls while holding ropes. However, they would have to be really high up, because the lowest branches of that type of tree were 50 feet off the ground.
I don't know, I said, scratching my head. It seems kind of dangerous.
Back on Earth, we studied an ancient empire called Egypt. They made huge pyramids, hundreds of feet tall, without the help of any machinery at all. Our little fort empire is much smaller, so building the walls should be a lot easier.
Climbing trees doesn't sound easy or safe.
Perhaps we could link ropes from different trees and create a low bridge above the fort. My people used to make such bridges when staying in one place for a long period of time.
Sheila really had experience in similar forest environments, but it wasn't quite what we needed. Just like my aqueduct idea, it would take months to make enough rope for a suspended bridge up in those giant trees.
Maybe.
How long did it take? I started to say before Trell interrupted. She laughed as she came out of her private space.
You seriously expect these women to hang from trees and throw around the mud? It is completely below their station to conduct themselves in these ways.
Trell spoke as she walked up to the fire pit on her human feet. Her silk dress shimmered in all the right places as I watched.
I'm going to be doing those things with them, I replied with as little sarcasm as possible. And on my planet, men and women are completely equal, so I don't see it as work above or below any of us.
You think males and females are equal?
Equal?
Trell replied in a deadly serious voice.
That is the most insulting thing you've said since you got here, especially since you also pretend we're building your empire. I bet you think of yourself as an emperor, and us women as your hapless pyramid builders.
I tried to interrupt, but she held up her claw hand to indicate she wasn't going to let me break her train of thought. My idea of empire had nothing to do with conquering lands in the real world. I'd done it hundreds of times in my video games, though, and I only called my fort an empire because it helped me organize my plans, the same way I did in my games. A strong foundation was a requirement for a simple fort or a galactic alliance. None of this would make sense to the Spider Woman.
That's wrong on every level possible,
Trell went on.
We aren't your slaves and you aren't an emperor. You're building a wooden stockade, nothing more than a four-sided fence. Calling it an empire makes you look like a power-mad fool.
She looked at me sternly.
So please, never use the words equality and empire again, since you clearly have no idea what they mean.
Trell seemed to take a deep breath so she could continue berating me.
Your male ideas of equality will have to be addressed in depth another time, I'm afraid. As I've been saying all along, I want to keep Sheila and Galmine from wasting their time on unworthy pursuits, and that's what you excel at planning. If you left them alone, I'd let you spend your time however you wanted.
Trell let out a malicious laugh. I'm not trying, I began, but she interrupted me.
Ladies? If you insist on this course, at least do it right,
Trell offered with fake sympathy.
Why let this male fool suck you with the labor of standing up each and every log when you could easily lay them down one on top of the other?
But we have to put them in the ground. That's how the fort is built. I held up both of my hands with all 10 fingers lined up next to each other like vertical fence slats.
Ugh! Male, you cannot be this stupid. I assure you it would take something much bigger than rocks to hammer in those logs. But you can solve all your problems by doing this.
She flattened both of her hands, then placed one above the other, so her digits formed a 10-rung ladder.
Then you only need 2 poles in the ground to support the walls. Like this.
She rested one hand of horizontal fingers into the V-shape of 2 claw fingers on her other hand to demonstrate her point.
Oh, she once again had a great idea. If we laid the logs one on top of the other, we didn't have to worry about a bunch of digging, and there would be almost no hammering required. It was the perfect solution I really should have thought of on my own.
There was no denying she was super smart when it came to planning and construction. Her special skill was structure building, not because it was arbitrarily assigned by aliens, but because she really was a genius at it. The problem with Trell was that she hated me. Well, all men, really. But her loathing gave me an idea. I could just play the dumb male forever and collect her good ideas when she belittled me. It would be a blow to my ego, but my ego wasn't going to matter if I was dead. I didn't care if she hated me, as long as I got her help. Results were the only thing that mattered at this point. We'd die if these walls weren't built. I exchanged glances with Sheila and Galmine. Both had put down their cords while Trell stood in front of us. It was up to me to convince her. Trell, Ideal Iria. I can honestly say, with no bullshit or flattery, that you have thought of an incredible idea for our fort. Driving in a few smaller stakes will be much easier than hammering in each of the larger logs. I wish I'd thought of it, I said.
I bet you do,
Trell replied, as if unsure she liked how the conversation ended. She studied me for a long time, before walking away from the light of the fire. I watched her go, feeling a little like I'd taken advantage of her, but her sour attitude made me quickly ignore that.
Thank you, Trell,
Galmine added as the spider woman left.
Yes, you've helped immensely,
Sheila continued. Sheila and Galmine got back to twisting cord while I resumed scraping out the hole in my axe handle. After a few minutes, I thought over the whole exchange with Trell and couldn't shake the feeling she always knew exactly what she was doing. I gave her credit for being a genius about building, but maybe she was a genius in everything she did. I just couldn't stop thinking about spider webs and bugs getting ensnared in that web. Perhaps I was the one being manipulated. I shook my head while observing the crackling fire. That flat piece of wood I'd been watching all night now had a hole burned all the way through. The runaway charcoal took a while, but it sizzled through the wood like it was butter. I compared that to the half-carved hole in the axe handle and had my own flash of inspiration. That's funny, I said. I've just realized how I can speed up making the notch for the axe blade. It's been staring me in the face all night. I explained our second big technological leap of the evening. The easiest way to make a neat hole in my axe handle wasn't with a blade. It was with fire. A short time later, I had everything I needed to test my theory. I used a couple of smaller pieces of wood, like chopsticks, to grab hot coals from deep inside the fire and transfer them into the hole I'd started on the axe handle. Once I packed them in and blew on the coals, it only took a handful of minutes to see the red-hot embers burrow down into the handle. Yes, this is gonna work, I said after seeing the proof of concept with the first coal. Over the next several minutes, I refined my process. I got better about dropping additional coals into the hole, and I figured out I needed something to keep the edges from burning. Galmine saw my problem and had a solution in moments. She gave me some bits of leftover clay to scrape around the rim of the hole to fireproof it.
We use mud a lot in my world to keep fires from getting out of hand, the rock woman explained. Every home has a hearth for cooking and warmth. Mud and rock do the best jobs of keeping the fire from hopping into our living rooms.
Well, it was perfect for this, I said after seeing it do its job. With the clay as protection, the coals only burned downward, not to the sides. One problem was solved, so I moved to the next on my list, maintaining the axe. Sheila, while these burn in the handle, do you mind showing me how you sharpen the stone blade?
I would love to,
the Catwoman said in a pleasant voice. She set down her cord project and pulled the flat cooking stone closer to her.
We'll use the backside of this as our grinder, she added.
She also grabbed a couple smaller stones and pulled them next to her. Want to learn her technique? I turned towards Galmine and gestured towards Sheila.
Sure. I do know a thing or two about stonework, but I would love to study Sheila's methods,
Galmine said with a bounce in her voice.
First, we use a smaller rock to break off the waste. Thanks to Trell, we have very little of that.
Shell pointed to the thinner side of the wedge-shaped rock, and then used even taps of her smaller stone to strike chips from the axe edge. Each time she stopped to look at her work, it seemed to look more and more like a blade.
Next, we must sharpen this edge by scraping it over this wet cooking rock.
She splashed some water on the cooking stone, then pushed and pulled the flat axe blade with both her hands. The constant grinding between the two rocks seemed like an incredible amount of labor, but she only stopped to inspect her progress every few minutes. I had to check my axe handle and add coals a few times in the 15 or 20 minutes she spent grinding the blade on the rock. She finally halted, checked her work one last time, then put the cooking stone back on the fire ring.
The last step is to polish it, to lessen the chance of cracking. We need a little more water for this.
Sheila tipped over a small amount of liquid from our pot. She found a small rounded rock and rubbed it steadily against the larger blade, giving the sharp edge a fine polishing. Finally, she put down her stone, rubbed the edge, and then set it next to me.
Here you go, Victor. May it serve us well.
Sheila picked up her cord as if I had never interrupted her.
Thank you, Sheila, I said happily. The long process suggested we needed 8 or 10 axes so we would always have sharp ones on the job site. During the night, we could spend our time on blade upkeep.
I bet your husband would never guess you'd be sharpening axe blades, huh? I wanted to keep the talk light, but I was also very curious if I had to worry about a jealous husband tracking me down sometime in the future.
No one on my planet could even imagine such a place as this, Sheila replied. We have dangerous forests and bleak lands, but most times we are never far from the safety of a village or royal keep. Only when we intentionally head off into the deep wilds can we encounter true danger. But even then, it's nothing close to what is found here.
So I guess you'd never seen a dinosaur until you arrived here, I asked. I'd stumbled into an important question about dinosaur land. Aside from ripping our eyes out and giving us a game-oriented computer screen, the most curious mystery was why the aliens chose dinosaurs from Earth for this place.
No. We have legends about large beasts in the deep woods on my world, but I admit they mainly serve to keep the cubs from wandering out on their own before they're ready to hunt.
Sheila laughed a little. Do you have pictures of these beasts? I asked.
Yes, Sheila replied. They are two-legged monsters much larger than our people. They are often drawn with long, disgusting black fur, horrible claws and red glowing eyes. Sometimes they creep through villages on all fours, like animals.
So, kind of like bigger, uglier versions of yourself, I ventured. I couldn't imagine an ugly version of the cat-like woman, but the comparison seemed appropriate.
Yes, Sheila admitted. The stories are told so that cubs understand the threat. If I tried to describe the monsters I've seen on this planet, the children would have no frame of reference, and therefore would not be properly deterred.
That's what I was thinking. Dinosaurs are alien to you, I said after putting it all together.
Very alien, yes,
Sheila answered as she twisted more cord. And Galmine, I'm betting you have nothing like dinosaurs on your world either. I turned in her direction. She took a moment longer than I expected to reply, kind of like she had to think about it.
Dinosaurs would rip my people apart, the tough-skinned woman said. We have no predators of any kind, at least none that I'm aware.
I have not traveled outside the Valley of the Breaks, so I can't say what's beyond. However, travelers do pass through our lands, and they've never spoken of any such horrible beasts on their journeys.
So the dinosaurs are also alien to you? I asked in my friendliest voice.
Everything is so alien here, Galmine started to say. The trees that pierce the sky, the mountains and endless ocean, even you, Victor. But yes, the most alien things are those creatures who seek to devour us.
Thanks, I said with my biggest smile. I'm just trying to figure out why they chose monsters from my world. It wasn't an occasion for a smile, but I had to pretend otherwise.
Anything for you,
Galmine said with a brightening face. I didn't have to ask Trell. If she had dinosaurs on her world, I was sure she would come out and brag about it, so her silence was her answer. I'd learned something important. We were on a world designed like prehistoric Earth. If this really was some kind of game, I figured the aliens in charge wanted the deadliest predators they could find. While part of me scoffed at the notion dinosaurs were the worst killers in the universe, I didn't dismiss it out of hand. Why else would the aliens travel back 100 million years to get them? We dropped back to our tasks as the conversation waned. With all my tweaks, I finished my axe about an hour later. When I was done, I held up the handle and looked at the lively fire through the long, thin hole. All I needed was a piece of wood to tap it in.
"Is it really this easy?" I said to both women.
"Yes.
Although, you will want to fire the wood," the feline warrior replied. "It will remove moisture and prevent breakage."
It only took a couple of minutes over the hot flames before it was done. Sheila, as our resident weapons expert, let me know when it was perfect. After it cooled, I set the rock blade into the now hardened slot and used a small piece of firewood to hammer it home.
"Right on," I declared. "This thing is awesome."
The axe looked like something out of an exhibit for prehistoric man or mythical dwarves. The blade was held in place by the pressure of being forced into the narrow crack. Every time the axe struck something, it would force it in a little tighter. I sat there beaming with pride and swung it a few times like I was chopping a tree.
"We need to make another one of these tomorrow," I said to Sheila. "I bet we can make the second axe in less than an hour."
Finding another cutting rock would be the only challenge, but Trell found one without even looking. The whole hillside was strewn with similar stones.
"Agreed,"
Sheila replied. "But I think we need to get some rest," I said as if testing the idea. I wasn't sure how long we'd been at it, but it felt like midnight at least. We needed to be up at dawn.
"I'm almost done, Victor,"
Galmine answered, finally sounding like she'd lost some of her cheerleader spunk. Both women worked through their last bits of leaves in the next few minutes. First Sheila and then Galmine put down their coils of cords after tying off the ends so they didn't come unraveled.
"We have a nice door now, but I think we need someone at the entrance while we're sleeping," I said.
"Which shift do you want me to take?"
Sheila asked, once again proving she was anxious to be told what to do. I was wrong about our whole back and forth earlier. There was nothing sexual about a request to get orders from me.
"Sheila, why don't you take the first shift? I'll take the middle. Galmine, will you take the last shift?" I suggested.
"You like it when we meet in the darkest of nighttime, don't you?"
Galmine tried to be sexy, but she also sounded exhausted. That's why I gave her the last shift. It definitely wasn't because I wanted to hear her whisper sweet things in my ear, or finally give me a kiss.
"I look forward to it," I said.
Chapter 10. The rest of the night flew by while we took turns keeping watch. On my shift, I could occasionally see the flashes of the giant fireflies in the grove, but that was outdone by an early morning lightning display from a powerful thunderstorm. It was the first rain I'd seen on the planet, and made me realize we'd need some kind of shelter inside our fort to keep out the weather. During the storm, I couldn't stop thinking of all we could do with rainwater. We could use some of those elephant ear-sized plant leaves to capture a downpour and guide the water into our pots. We'd need Galmine to make lots more pots, or just a giant one to store a larger quantity. Or better yet, we could dig a hole and line it with clay, so we'd have a full-on collection pond. Hell, if we did it right, we'd probably never need to go to the stream again. My to-do list and stress levels exploded while I planned each detail of our forthcoming rainwater project. There was too much to do, and not enough time to do it. Water and how to capture it was still on my mind when Galmine nudged me.
"My turn, Victor,"
she said in a delightful whisper.
"Oh, thank God,"
I replied. I'd reached my limit guarding the door and was ready to fall over. I did get a couple of hours of rest before Sheila tapped me awake for this middle shift, but I figured out right away my body was desperate to get back to sleep. The thunder of the storm and planning for our water helped keep me awake, but that excitement had vaporized by the time Galmine nudged me.
"Get to sleep, Victor,"
she said with a mischievous smile. "I can tell you're not in the mood for more."
"I don't know what I want. I can barely think," I said with dreary eyes and slurred words. I'm sure my face must have been a confused mix of exhaustion and desire.
Her touch was magnetic on my arm as she led me to the fire and then guided me onto my back. Even though she crouched there with the appearance of being naked, I couldn't keep my 100-pound eyelids open.
"Maybe tomorrow night you'll be on the last shift and you can come and get me,"
Galmine said in a lullaby-sweet voice.
"Maybe tomorrow night,"
I repeated as if I was already dreaming.
I will think about it all day while you're out there protecting us. The sexy stone woman breathed into my ear. After a brief pause, she kissed my cheek. I opened my eyes for a moment, hoping I could answer her, but she was already up and headed back toward the entrance. Her hourglass shape and soft curves glimmered in the firelight as she sauntered away. The way she walked revealed a cute little thigh gap between her legs, and I immediately fought against sleep like a drowning man in the water. I wanted to admire it for just a few more seconds, but it was no use. My eyes surrendered to sleep before she reached the gate.
"Victor, wake up,"
Sheila said in a low voice. "Well, shit," I answered when I saw the daylight through the doorway. My bones, muscles, and joints were all in pain from spending so much time on the ground. It reminded me why I wanted to build a bed. I put that back into my job jar.
"I'm sorry, Sheila, it isn't you,"
I chuckled. "I swear the nights are shorter than home. It feels like I just laid down." The pain was bad enough, but I also felt drained from a night of bad dreams. Rather than pleasant visions of Galmine's body, I had terrible nightmares of being twisted and then rolled up and down one of Trell's spider legs like I was a piece of cord. I tried not to disturb Galmine as I sat up and put on my hat. The beautiful granite woman was curled up asleep right next to me, and I didn't want to wake her. Jinx was also sleeping in her arms. It looked like she was snuggling with a blue-feathered teddy bear.
"I am waking you up, as you instructed me, but I'm fine to go get water by myself."
She had the new jugs hooked onto opposite ends of a spear and balanced on her shoulders, just as I planned to do. I looked them over and then focused back on her. It was tempting to order her to do something safe, so I could take the greater risk and get the water, but that would start me down a dangerous path. I couldn't afford to play favorites, and I had to put everyone where they could do the most good, no matter how dangerous it was for them. I wiped my eyes to clear them of the horrible night of sleep and hopped up onto my feet.
"You've got a spear, so that's good," I said. "It's a shame we can't throw the original water pot on your back. The jug-carrying spear would also serve as her weapon if she got into trouble, but I would hate to have her go out and leave the old pot behind."
"You will just have to think of a more efficient system than this,"
the feline woman said as she gestured to the contraption over her shoulders.
"Okay.
We'll use the little pot for something else," I replied. "You be safe and get the water, then come back and collect firewood. I'll work with the new axe until you return."
"I will be safe," she answered.
We walked to the tree barrier we used as a door, and together we pushed it onto the entrance so we could step through. Though the axe was a kind of weapon, I figured a spear would be more useful defending against dinos, so I picked one up as soon as we exited.
"Your tree idea for this door really worked well, Victor," Sheila said while she adjusted the spear on her back. "I slept better knowing it was there."
I inhaled a deep breath of the cool morning air while we stood at the top of the ramp. The rocks and bushes near the entrance to the cave were damp from the overnight rain. It was a sign of how humid the day was going to be, and I guessed we were going to have to make an extra trip or two to get more water. The redwood grove looked fresh and new, but a lone roar from far away served as notice that the old threats were still out there. I looked up to greet our pterodactyl friend, but didn't see her on her regular branch. She wasn't perched on any of the other trees near us either, so I hoped the thunderstorm finally chased the dino bird away.
"I know I keep saying this, but be extra careful. Our big bird is missing.
She might be at the stream getting a fish," I said to Sheila while pointing to the empty branch above us.
"I will be careful and quick," Sheila said as she started down the ramp.
Before she went more than a few paces, she stopped and turned back to me.
"Thank you for your concern about my husband last night, Victor."
She smiled a bit before she spun around and went into the redwood grove. The way she carried the jugs and the spear looked just like a barbell, and I could imagine her working out on Muscle Beach back home. I let myself get distracted watching her go, and she was well out of voice range before I thought to say, "You're welcome." I felt uneasy when she became obscured by the bushes and ferns out in the grove. I watched as long as possible, but after a few minutes passed, I knew she was already well beyond the range of my help. When she was gone, I added the bow and arrow to my to-do list. That would give me the ability to reach out and strike at things far away. Actually, what I needed was a .50 caliber BMG sniper rifle, because every shooter game had something like it,
With a huge telescopic scope and a perch up in a tree, I could probably protect Sheila all the way to the stream and back. Before I let myself get needlessly worried, I took some more deep breaths. Every new item I added to my to-do list was another allocation of resources I needed to figure out. I also had to consider what order everything should be completed. We had spears, for now, so would bows and arrows get us that?